The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 491. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. I am very excited to bring you this episode. It's been in the can for the last couple of weeks. I was just waiting on the appropriate time to release it, and this week is that time. I'm talking to a gentleman that has as much love and fandom for the old WWF LJN rubber action figures that I do. I'm talking about 80s wrestling fan Brian. Now, not only does Brian collect LJNs, but he also repaints them, sometimes repainting them in their original getup and gear, and sometimes elaborating a little bit. I use the example that we all know of the Ricky the Dragon Steamboat LJN that was in the black ninja-like tights. Well, Brian took it upon himself to give him the white WrestleMania tights with the dragons on the boots and the red headband. So we're going to hear all about the process that Brian uses for doing repaints on these LJNs. You're also going to hear about his podcast called Legendary Wrestling Figures, where he talks about not only all the projects he has going on with the various different repaints and figures and whatnot, but also talks about the resurgence of these 8-inch rubber action figures through, of course, Major, also known as the Big Rubber Guys. So it's an awesome episode, and in fact, it's so awesome, and Brian is so awesome, that you're going to hear him offer to give me a Bruno Sammartino LJN, of which I said, yes, you don't have to twist my arm. I would love to have a Bruno Sammartino action figure. It's one of the ones that I'm missing. And he had it completely repainted and sent to me in like a week. I was like an 8-year-old kid, and it was Christmas time opening that package. So Brian does some great work, and I want to thank him publicly for the Bruno action figure. It means a lot to me to have that figure. And you're also going to hear a very popular segment from Brian's podcast called Andre Karaoke. And so I'm not going to delay too much in getting to our conversation, but I do have to let you know about a couple of sponsors that help this podcast out. And the first one is Courtney614 Online Sales. If you need great deals on women's fashion and health and beauty, then look no further than Courtney614. You can find her at all the major reselling sites, you know, like eBay, Mercari, whatnot. Simply look for Courtney614, that's C-O-R-T-N-E-Y 614, or Courtney_614, spelled the exact same way, to get your hands on some fabulous deals. And while you're at it, please let her know that you heard this ad right here on the PVD Cast. And now for the OG sponsor, I gotta thank World's Greatest Comics. You know that it is, in my opinion, the greatest comic book store in the state of Ohio. They've got everything you need for your fandom, whether you're talking about single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They even have some cool stuff behind the counter as well. If you're in the state of Ohio, they're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But if you're not in the state of Ohio, you can still check them out. Their web address is at wgcomics.com, and they're pretty active on their Facebook page. Just look for at wgcomics. And once again, I want to thank everybody affiliated with World's Greatest Comics for their support throughout the years. It means a lot to me. All right, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with 80s wrestling fan Brian. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I am sitting down with the 80s wrestling fan, Brian, the man that's also the creator of the Legendary Wrestling Figures podcast. Brian, I'm excited to sit down and talk with you. How are you this evening?
John, I'm doing great, and I'm excited to talk to you as well. I've listened to some of your shows. I got to hear a really awesome episode where you got to interview five wrestlers on there: Tito Santana, Cowboy Bob Orton, Tatanka, Road Warrior Animal, and One Man Gang, who gave you a really hard time. And so,
yes,
that one was one of my favorites. But I also got to listen to you talking to Wilkie from Wilkie's YouTube channel with movies and music. And I think you and I are right around the same age. I was born in 74. I think you're right in that ballpark with me.
75.
Yeah, there you go. And so listening to you and Wilkie talk about music and movies, I was just like, oh, I wish I was talking to these guys. They've got a lot of the same background that I have. And Wilkie's like throwing out Toad the Wet Sprocket. I'm like, oh, that's the first concert I went to. And I'm just like, really cool stuff to listen to. And you've got you've also got some real serious content. So I want to let the viewer, let the listeners know, this is the opposite. This is something that I'm going to talk about. My wife calls it the dollies that I had back when I was a kid, and refurbishing those, painting them, and just kind of living the nostalgia of collecting 8-inch rubber wrestling figures from the 1980s. So I really appreciate you having me on. I look forward to our conversation, my friend.
Well, let's start off with the show, the podcast. Why did you decide to start the podcast?
So I started getting on a show called 80s Wrestling, the podcast, and calling in every week and talking for 10 minutes at most, maybe 5 minutes, getting to talk to wrestlers. I think I talked to about 24 wrestlers. They used to have guests on that show, but there's a guy named Tommy Fierro that runs an independent wrestling federation up in New Jersey. And he has a gentleman named Jumping Jay in Minnesota. And the two of them have a weekly podcast Thursday mornings, 10 a.m. Eastern time, 7 a.m. Pacific. And when I discovered it, I just fell in love with calling every week. And we would talk about subjects or particular wrestlers from the golden age of wrestling back when I was a fan, the 1980s. And the more and more that I got on there and talked on the show and got to interact with those guys, and the more and more I started listening to other podcasts, like there's a guy named Brian Breaker that's done several podcasts that was kind of inspirational listening to him, and Drew and Caitlin Venzel, a husband and wife podcast that I've listened to, and the Fully Posable Wrestling podcast with Jeff and Scott too, and these brothers that are just phenomenal. They've been doing it for over 8 years now. So I started listening to these podcasts. I'm like, you know what? I'd love to just dip my toe in this and see how it goes. And I started off with just these short 15-minute shows that I was talking about painting wrestling figures. I started painting the figures in around January 2023. It's something I'd always wanted to do. And so I started doing that. And then I figured, you know what, I'll try this podcast format. I just went to a wrestling convention in New Jersey where I got a chance for the first time to actually meet some wrestlers in person, all these heroes: Sergeant Slaughter, Bret Hart, Cowboy Bob Orton, Demolition, Axe and Smash. Got to even go to catering the night before, because Tommy Fierro, I flew out early from California to New Jersey. I'm from Northern California, up in a little town called Chico. And so I went and spent about 4 days there, and I got to hang out with a guy named Toto Atom, who's a manager in ISPW, this independent wrestling federation that's owned by Tommy Fierro. And so we got to go and pick up Leilani Kai at the airport, and Barbarian at the airport, and also Nikita Koloff. And so that night before the big convention, I got to hang out with these guys, and I gave some of these painted figures. I gave an Andre figure to Axe, and I gave a Paul Orndorff figure to B. Brian Blair and Paul Orndorff were best friends, and Orndorff had died the year before, and with Axe, Andre was the godfather to his daughter. So I got to have these experiences with these guys, and I got more and more confident. And I thought, you know, I'm gonna I'm going to try doing this podcast, and I think it'll just be these little 15-minute episodes. And now 2 years later, it's gone through these changes, and I've started having guests on and reviewing all the different lines of LJN. We started out with 1984 and had the guests go on and rate them with a up to a 5-star rating. And then at the end of the season, kind of see who came out on top, and did the same thing for the 1985 figures. And now we're on season 3 with the 1986 figures. And at some point in that process, I started having Andre the Giant do karaoke songs at the end of the episodes, and Andre kind of joined the show. And so there's a character, Andre, that has become a real fun thing. And so I try to do one, an episode a week if I can. There's times where I'll miss doing some episodes. It's, you know, this is a labor of love and fun, and just getting to meet people. I've gotten so many friends that are in this hobby that I've made. And so you just meet all these cool people, and you get kind of addicted to doing, you know, talking about things that are nostalgic to you and talking about just good stories, you know. So, anywhere from going to Disneyland with my folks, collecting, wrestling figures, Star Wars, G.I. Joes, just all kinds of the stuff we love. So when you contacted me and I started listening to your show, I'm like, okay, John's all over the map. He's got all kinds of interests. I think I can definitely talk to this guy. I think we got a lot of the same interests. And congratulations. I think this might be 488 on your episode, or 489. You're real close to 500 episodes.
Close to 500. In fact, today, this is podcast number 2 that I've recorded today. I was doing the math. I was like, oh man, I'm 13 episodes away from 500. And I didn't, you know, when I set out to do this a long, long time ago, Brian, I didn't anticipate. I mean, I knew I would continue doing it, but I didn't think I would continue doing it up to almost 500 episodes. And you know, the history of this show is kind of a little bit of a lengthy one. I don't want to detract from talking about what we want to really, really talk about, which is LJN action figures. But we'll just say that I started off doing this podcast once a month, and then after 6, 7, 8 months, it was twice a month, and it's built to what it is today. And I'm very proud of that fact. And likewise, like what you said, I totally agree with the opportunity to meet and talk to people who have similar interests or different interests. I've had some guests where I'm like, I don't know anything about what you're going to talk about, but enlighten me, let me learn from you. And yeah, it's been an awesome ride, and one that I can't wait to continue.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm up to around 130 episodes, and it's just such a different thing than when I started. I'd probably be if I listened back to those first several shows, I'd probably just be like cringing and just just like so horrified at how it sounds and everything. I hope to get better. You know, there's always room for improvement. You're always probably your worst critic. So, I mean, there's all kinds of room for improvement. I listen to somebody like, these shows that I've mentioned, or I listened to Roddy Piper and his podcast he had in 2014, 2015. I'm like, damn, Roddy was such an entertainer. It's like, well, yeah, he was the best in the world on the microphone. He had Piper's Pit, you know, and you listen to, you know, your show, and it's just like, okay, I have so much room for growth. I'll probably never get there, but it's something where nobody can fire me. I'm not getting paid to do this. It's just a fun hobby, you know? So, yeah. You know, somebody told me today, well, you got to get an agent. And I said, yeah, it'd be no problem. I'd give them 10% of $0. It wouldn't cost a thing. It'd be perfect. So yeah, it's fun stuff. And yeah, it's like you just kind of get addicted, and it grows and grows. So I'm guessing that if you went back and listened to your first few shows, you tell people don't do it, right?
Yeah, I I'm making the gagging motion because we are audio only. But yeah, I mean, they're cringeworthy. Of course they are. I mean, but agreed. You know, you just got to keep getting better and improving. You know, millimeter by millimeter, inch by inch, whatever you want to say, and have fun with it, because you're right. No one's making millions and millions of dollars on this.
No. And the thing, you know, I don't have a ton of listeners, but you know what? I got a bunch of guys that are just, they've done this, the most kind thing, things like I have guys, a guy named Matt up in Boston sent me a laptop to help recording, and another guy, he just made the opening for the show. So I'm not, I'm not too tech savvy. And so just in the last couple episodes, there's an opening for the show where he grabbed some audio and clips from the past. And just, he just called me and said, "Hey, I'm working on something for you." And this is Chris Consoli up in Canada. And I said, "Okay, cool." And I didn't know what he was talking about. I'm like, I hope he didn't spend a bunch of money to ship me something from Canada. And and then all of a sudden I get this email with an audio file of an opening for my show, and it just blew me away. I'm like, you know, just the kindness of all these people though that spend their time listening to me, which it's hard to believe people actually listen or are fans of the show. But yeah, it's just so gratifying to meet all these cool people that are like loyal friends and fans, and I've become loyal friends and fans of their shows in a lot of cases as well. So yeah, just a really fun hobby for sure, as I'm sure you've realized as well, like you said.
Yeah. So let's talk about why you decided to focus the show around LJNs. You said because you had started to repaint them. Was it just an easy, like, hey, I'm repainting these, I might as well just make a show out of it and tell people the process and how I go about doing it, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, at first it was kind of that. I mean, about 10 years before I started, my mom passed away, and she was young. She was 61 and the most wonderful lady in the world, and spoiled the hell out of me, and sent my dad with lists to go get like all the different Christmas action figures. You know, started off with Star Wars and the evil collect them all mantra of Star Wars, where I got addicted to trying to have everything. So you start off with Star Wars, you get into Transformers and G.I. Joes, and then I was 11 years old, about to turn 12 in 1986. And my best friend, Eric, who that's another awesome thing about my show. I have a little segment with my best friend that we've known each other since kindergarten. And so, we hadn't talked for about 15 years, and my mom passed away in 2013. And a few months later, he contacted me. And right before she had passed away, I'd went and retrieved all my 40 LJN figures that my brother and I had as kids. And I brought them to my house and started cleaning them up. It was right around Christmas time. And then in January, my mom passed away, and it was just the most difficult thing I'd ever dealt with. And I think it took about, 10 years. It was a little over 10 years when I started the podcast. And I just started feeling this nostalgia and this connection. And that was one way to express it, is bring these figures that in a lot of cases, these things are just beat to hell. The paint has been traded with other figures. And so I was like, I'm going to rejuvenate, basically give new life to some of these old figures. And then I'd been doing that for a few months. I thought, there's nobody out there in this space that I know of anyway, that's talking about the process of taking the old paint off and painting them with new paint. And then I was just so focused on that era of 1986 to about 92, but in specific that 1986 to 89 or so. And those figures, they started in 84, they ended in 89. So that period of wrestling, I've got kind of a laser focus on that period. So I'm not real knowledgeable from about 93 until today, really, but I didn't start, I quit wrestling, being a wrestling fan for about 20 years. And then around the time I started being buddies with, and reconnected with my best friend from kindergarten, I started kind of following wrestling again, and we started talking wrestling around 2013. So I'm kind of a fan from afar now. I mean, I've heard you've got a great voice. I've heard you've done some announcing in wrestling. I've heard some of your recap shows about the past WrestleMania and this week in wrestling, or the state of wrestling that you've done. So, I mean, you're far more knowledgeable. I'm wondering, did you ever leave as a wrestling fan, or have you been a fan all these years?
I'm one of the few people that I think I've encountered that I never have ever stopped watching. I've always, even now, like, I don't watch AEW, but I'll still watch the recaps on YouTube. I'll still read about the results, but I've never stopped. I've just never have. It's consumed me. Like, it really truly has. I've never taken time off.
Yeah, and I've got a few buddies like that too. Like my buddy Eric, didn't really leave as a fan. So it's really interesting the connection they have. Like the timing of this show is crazy. Hulk Hogan just passed away. I've got several friends that are just devastated by it. I wasn't a Hulkamaniac. I was kind of like with Star Wars. There was Luke Skywalker is probably the star of that franchise as far as who it was really centered around. And I would always go, you know, Han Solo was my favorite, or in G.I. Joe, the Duke might be the lead character. And so I would gravitate, I'd like Flint, you know? And so in wrestling, you know, I was a big Roddy Piper fan. He became a babyface shortly after I started watching. And so I gravitated towards him. My best friend was a huge Hulkamaniac. In football, my best friend loved Joe Montana. I watched the 49ers beat the Cowboys in January 82 with my dad on their way to their first Super Bowl. So my best friend was a big Joe Montana fan. I was a big Dwight Clark fan. And so Hulk Hogan passing away, again, I wasn't a Hulkamaniac, but there's no modern wrestling without the building block and the brightest star of 80s wrestling, Hulk Hogan, building it to what it is today. So regardless of what happened outside the squared circle, he's somebody that affected all of us that grew up during that time. Were you a Hulkamaniac, or did you gravitate towards other guys?
I was not. I share the story. I was not a Hulkamaniac, because even at a young age, I just realized there was something just boring about Hulk. Like, I wasn't excited to see him. But I will say this. Two times I got the opportunity when I was a kid to go to the Pittsburgh Civic Arena to see the WWF. The first time was in 88, Hogan versus Kamala. And the second time was 91, Flair versus Hogan. And both of those times I'm like, eh, whatever, Hulk Hogan's on the card. But when he comes out, when that music hits, and when that charisma comes marching through that curtain, and he's got you cannot not be a fan. Like, I had to cheer, even though I'm like, I don't really dig Hogan, but just the presence, the aura of him, I broke. Like, yeah, you know, and it was even more, I guess it was even more important that 91, because I was the teenager that was like, oh man, Flair's the best, man. Forget Hogan. He sucks. You know, same thing happened though. He came out, I lost my shit. I was like, yeah, that's you know what I mean? Like, you just couldn't take that away from him. At least from my perspective, I look at Hogan as Hogan, the entertainer, the wrestler, the hero is Hulk Hogan. Terry Bollea is the man, the human being who has done some really terrible things. I can separate them out. And so I'm preferring to remember him as the hero, as a you know, what I remember as a kid.
Yeah, and I'm thinking if it was against Kamala, it had to have been late 86 or early 87, in fact, that you saw him, because I think Kamala left 87. He was going to go on a Saturday night's main event against Hogan, and he didn't want to lose, and he probably had some issues with the payouts from WWF. So Sika ended up filling in, and Kamala ended up leaving, and he eventually came back. But yeah, you were a young kid also, you know, born in sacrifice. You were 11 or 12 years old. So yeah, when you're 91, I'm sure you're a louder fan, you know, somebody that's willing to stand up and yell instead of just kind of in awe and listening to the crowd around you and see what's going on.
Right. Being that snot-nosed 15-year-old punk who's like, Ric Flair's the best. Woo! You know, Hogan sucks. Where's the Road Warriors? Because, you know, I watched all wrestling. I watched WWF, NWA, WCCW, Mid-South when Mid-South was still around, and then it became UWF. If there was any wrestling on, I was watching it or I was taping it, because my parents were fed up with me watching wrestling on Saturday afternoons when it's bright and sunny outside and I should be out there playing basketball or riding a bike or mowing the lawn.
Yep.
So the invention of the VCR was fantastic for my family. It quelled so many arguments.
Definitely. Yeah, you had to have been being in Ohio, you had such a great place to grow up where you could watch NWA. Out in Northern California, I couldn't get NWA programming. So I got a little bit of UWF. I would scan the TV guide and like look through day every hour of every day. And sometimes there'd be like, they would fill in some programming at 3 a.m. on one of the channels, and it wouldn't be there the next week. But if I saw it there, I would set the VCR to record, and I'd get to watch UWF, which was in 87 and 86. That would have been what Mid-South had become as UWF, mm-hmm. before Herb Abrams UWF a few years later. And then AWA, it was always like reruns on ESPN, and there was hardly anybody in that building, and it just looked second tier to me. But, you know, I'd try and watch AWA after school on the weekdays if I could. WWF was really the bulk of what I got to see. But yeah, I envy guys like you that also got to watch NWA programming and have that whole wide array. I often wonder how different my fandom would have been if I'd gotten to see Ric Flair and the Road Warriors on a regular basis and Dusty Rhodes and all these amazing stars that transcended the business just, you know, on the other side of the country. When did you start collecting LJN figures? Was that something where you were in right at the beginning, like 1984, or did it take, you know, I didn't start till late 86. I actually started with those little 3¾ or 4 inch Bendy's figures, and then I kind of moved into the 8 inch figures. But what about you?
I was in from the get-go, because I remember seeing a display of them at my local JCPenney, because, you know, they always had that small little toy section, or at least mine did. Had this small little toy section. And I remember seeing them. And I remember a couple of the boys that I was in Boy Scouts with, they had Superfly Jimmy Snuka, and I think they had Andre with the Afro. And immediately I was in. And I think that Christmas I got quite a few of them. Which one specifically, I don't remember. But and then it was off and running. In fact, when it came to Series 5, I was actually scouring like toy stores in other cities. Like my mom and dad would be like, so what do you want to do today? Can we go to Wheeling, West Virginia, blah 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 blah, this toy store? Okay, you know, and they would reluctantly take me there so I could buy a Kamala and at this store that is 35 minutes away from my home. So but I was in from the get-go. Yeah, absolutely.
And before we talked on it, before we started recording, you told me you've got all but like 9 figures. So you've got a huge collection still all these years later.
Yeah, they're all in a big giant plastic crate. And I was shocked by that too. So I want the listeners at home to understand. I was just doing a little research for this, and I told Brian, I said, I didn't realize I was only short 9 figures. And a couple of those, I don't know what you felt about, because I'm sure that you, like I, had on Saturday or Sunday afternoons big matches with the ring and the figures and everything. Did you find, like, I disliked some of the poses that guys were in, and that's why, like, the double bicep for Paul Orndorff. As a kid, I was like, well, what can he do? Like, his arm, like, I was so concrete in my thinking that sometimes I would like, I don't want him. Cowboy Bob Orton's got a weird like forearm thing that I was like, I don't want him. You know what I mean? So for me, I wanted the action figures like Junkyard Dog, that you could, like, he could do moves with him and his arms could be flexed a little bit more, or Hogan, or SD Jones was another favorite of mine. And so for me as a kid, it was more important that I could have great matches with them than just collecting them and doing whatever with. I don't know if that seems, it might seem weird to some folks. I don't know.
Oh, not at all. Cause I mean, when we were, you know, growing up with Star Wars being articulated figures where they would move around, and then going a step further with more articulation into G.I. Joes, you're using your imagination, but then you get these 8-inch figures that are larger in life, and you've got that in your hand, and it's like, man, it's this substantial thing with some weight to it. You're thinking, man, this is pretty damn cool. And like you say, Junkyard Dog, Hulk Hogan, they can slam a different wrestler, or you can put, you know, you can do different moves or whatnot. But yeah, some of them, if you want Paul Orndorff to do a pile driver, it's really kind of up to your imagination more than anything. And then this feud that you brought and you showed me, it looks like you were kind of like me. You didn't beat the hell out of your figures, because I had a couple of people that I knew where they had so much traded paint from the other figures. They were so scuffed up and used that it looked like they were really smashing their figures against each other. But the three that you showed me before the show, I thought, okay, John was pretty careful with his figures, kind of like I was.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I know my Roddy Piper's trashed. I mean, his shirt's completely worn off. My Hogan has got a lot of missing red knee pad paint. There's ones that are pretty bad. As I said to you, I just picked the top three that were laying on the top of the pile, which happened to be the Tito Santana in purple tights, Randy Macho Man Savage, and Haku. But yeah, I when it came to any of my toys, because I too was a Star Wars and G.I. Joe collector, my parents really put the edict down that you will play with your toys, but you will not purposely destroy your toys. Because much like you, I had friends who were, hey, let's light these G.I. Joes up with firecrackers. No. My mom and dad were not putting up with that, because I came from a middle-class family, you know, and we were not wealthy. And so for my parents, like, that was their mindset. Like, we will give John what he wants. We will spoil him. But there's going to be this caveat. And so I did really try to take care of my stuff. Because if I didn't, then I knew my parents were going to be mad at me and there would be no board toys. So,
yeah. Yeah, and it's like, you know, you can't yell at a kid when he accidentally breaks something. Like, I had the Rattler from G.I. Joe, the Cobra plane where the wings would turn up and he could, and
I got it too.
Right after I got it, though, the thing took a nosedive and the Gatling gun broke off the nose. I was just like, ah, and you know, it's not like you're going to get a second Rattler plane. Your folks are just like, well, you know, tough shit. That's how, you know, that's how it works. You have a broken Rattler, the Gatling gun is no longer going to work out on that one. So things like that would just drive me nuts as a kid. Or if I lost an accessory like Storm Shadow's bow, I just, you know, it still bothers me 40 years later, I should say, that was probably 1983. So 42 years later, that Storm Shadow's bow is still bugging me right now that I don't have it.
Man, my Sling'em Fling'em wrestling ring for the LJNs, like, I wore it out. I literally, like, just did a body slam in the center, fractured. And so my dad, like, super glued some, like, material behind it to push it up, but there was still a crack in it. And I dropped my AWA ring and broke the ring posts off. So my dad redid the belt or the ring posts and the turnbuckles for me. Because yeah, you were right. You weren't, like, my parents weren't going to go, okay, well, just throw it away and we'll go buy another AWA ring. No, you know, it's, you know, that's not how I was brought up.
Yeah. So you must have had the Remcos before you had the, or around the same time that you had the LJNs. I think they predated them just slightly. So
yes, I have a giant collection of the Remcos. And in fact, about 3 years ago, I was at a toy convention here in Columbus, PowerCon, and I picked up a really good set of the High Flyers, Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzel. I was missing that tag team. I got them for a really good price, and they're in really good shape. So I was like, they didn't have the card or anything. They were in a Ziploc bag, but I'm like, I played with mine. So they're not going to be perfect, just like the LJNs. I played with them. I had super cards all the time in my bedroom and, you know, on any given weekend. So there was a guy that had some of the Remcos that were absolutely pristine, still in the package. I was like, hey, man, how much for the fabulous ones? And I knew I was opening up my mouth to something that I wasn't willing to sacrifice. The guy's like, oh, $550. I'm like, yeah, okay, bye. Like, yep. I want them, but not that bad.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, the other thing timing wise is that, you know, Big Rubber Guys from a company called Major, the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast, Brian Myers and Matt Cardona, Mark Sterling, they started this company building figures that are like the LJNs, 8-inch rubber figures. So they have these Big Rubber Guys figures. They've got one that you'd probably still be interested in. It's on Big Bad Toy Store. And if you're looking for figures, these are a little over $100. You can get a set of the Road Warriors. I know that interviewing Road Warrior Hawk was really special to you. And I know mm-hmm. you're a big Road Warriors guy. So they have something that's very reminiscent of the LJNs. But Just before we recorded in the last couple of days, Mattel has decided to jump back into the realm of these 8-inch rubber figures. So they've actually launched another line of these figures. There's another company called Latuni that makes them, but Mattel is the one that is licensed by WWE and makes all their action figures. And so they've put out a John Cena, a Logan Paul, and a Dusty Rhodes, and they went up. We're talking on Friday the 25th. Those went up this morning, and at least Dusty Rhodes and John Cena they sold out by midday as far as ordering those figures. That Dusty Rhodes with polka dots, but they're actually going to relaunch a Hulk Hogan, and eventually they delayed that one because of him passing. And they've also got an Ultimate Warrior and a King Kong Bundy that look like the exact same poses as what those 1985 Bundy and 89 Warrior had. Warrior is something that would be hugely expensive if you tried to go back and get an old LJN. So guys that might have missed that one, now they'll be able to get one, and they're only doing it for $25. So Major has got a price point around $50. Mattel looks like they're really trying to cut in that business with a $25 price point. Is Ultimate Warrior among the collection that you have, or is that one that you didn't pick up?
I did not get Ultimate Warrior. Could never find Ultimate Warrior. I could never find the Hogan that was the second one that had the more he was kind of like at an angle, like, yeah, like you have there. So never had those two. The only one I regret not getting, like sincerely regret, and that's because growing up near Pittsburgh, I never got a Bruno Sammartino because, again, as a kid, I'm like, he commentates. And I was ignorant to how impactful he was, maybe, you know, so I do regret never getting a Bruno that I have kept my eyes out for one that's, I found a few, but they were a little high priced. But so those, I never got Rick Rude.
Well, there was a few that were in Canada. The Grand Toys of Canada took over the final year in 1989. One of them surprised me had was that Haku figure, but also Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior. Those are big bucks now, the most expensive of the line, except for the Hasbro that you have by that's a Sergeant Slaughter. That's an LJN knockoff. That's probably the most expensive that you could find out there. But those 1989 Grand Toys of Canada figures, those are in the hundreds of dollars. So yeah, if you wanted to add an Ultimate Warrior to collection, that'll be up in wave two coming up sometime down the road. And I'll talk to you about after the show. I have a couple, I might have a couple Sammartinos I might be able to hook you up with.
Okay.
Just for having me on the show. So,
oh man. Okay.
They'll need a, they'll probably need a new paint job, but that kind of makes them cooler. So I'm gonna hook you up. So okay. Anyway.
Let's talk real quickly about the process for the listeners. What's the process for repainting, say, a Bruno Sammartino or an Ultimate Warrior, Rick Rude action figure?
So a lot of these figures they're just missing some paint. You know, they're 41 years old if they're from 1984. And they went through 1989. So these things are 35, 40 years old, and they got played with, you know? So a lot of the paint got traded with other figures. They've been in storage, they're dusty, they're dirty. So usually what I'll do is try to find some that don't have decay spots on them. Some of them have these yellow, greenish spots that you can't remove. Some of them have red ink. Maybe kids wanted their figures to get color and bleed, and so they used a red pen or something, and you can't get rid of some of those stains, or blue ink is also tough. But a lot of them, they've just got they just need to be cleaned up. So I'll take really hot water with dish soap, and I'll get these figures that I might pick up on eBay and start off with just scrubbing them with a toothbrush, leaving them to soak in hot water with dish soap, and getting them all cleaned up first. Then I'll take some cotton rounds, like like women would remove their makeup with, and Q-tips. The cotton rounds are more efficient. The Q-tips are good on the fine details, but I'll take acetone, you know, like nail polish remover, acetone, and I'll get rid of all the paint. And so once I've gotten the figure cleaned up and gotten rid of all the paint, and hopefully I've gotten a figure that doesn't have too much physical damage, because you can't really do anything about, you know, missing fingers on a Ricky Steamboat or on a Bruno Sammartino, or gashes in a figure, or somebody that's taken a compass and gouged out an eye or something, you know, stuff like that. There's, unless you're into sculpting or something, there's not much you can do with that. But if you've got one that's just dirty or has the paint missing, I'll remove all that. And then I'll just use acrylic paints and a lot of patience and fine tip brushes. And a lot of times I'll try to give them gear that I thought they should have had, or a lot of the LJNs didn't have the laces on their boots weren't painted. They were all one color, or the soles on their boots are all one color. So a lot of times I'll paint those white, or they won't have wrist tape that they might've worn, you know, as a wrestler, they would have wrist tape. So I'll paint that on there. Or they might have, like Roddy Piper might have red trunks and red knee pads, and he always wore blue. Or, you know, that they won't have socks, and some of them they had socks. So I like to add these little details that the original ones didn't have. Or, you know, Roddy's t-shirt didn't have the red ringer on the around the neck and around the sleeves of his shirt. So I'll paint the extra little details that, like that, and try to make them look a little better than they ever did. And then once I'm done, when I first started doing it, I took this Mod Podge, glossy Mod Podge, and I'd brush that over the whole figure to try and give it a layer of protection to kind of seal it off. Now I just do that on the painted surfaces, so that the arms and the legs and whatever isn't painted, it feels just like the old LJNs did. But giving it a coat of glossy Mod Podge, I can just use acrylic paint that's just matte paint. I don't even have to get glossy paint. Once I've got it all painted, the Mod Podge really kind of makes it shine like it's a brand new figure or something. And on some of the more creative ones, maybe I'll print out like on a Roddy Piper, that was my 200th repaint. So I just crossed 200 of these that I've restored or painted. I printed off a Superman logo, and just with regular printer paper, and then cut that out. And then once I had his red shirt all painted and his green trunks that he wore way before, you know, back in 83, right when he, in early 84, right when he came to WWF, then I will take that Superman logo and I'll brush that on with some Mod Podge and use the end of a paintbrush to try and smooth that out over the chest, so it looks like it belongs there. Same thing with the Hot Rod logo. The ones from LJN were just a yellow logo. So if I print it out in the yellow and red, how Roddy had it, and then cut it out very carefully and then Mod Podge it on there, all of a sudden he looks more like the real Roddy Piper instead of the more generic paint job. And so, it on average, these things probably take me about 6 hours, you know, something that's super detailed. I might spend 10 or 11 hours on it. Something like a King Kong Bundy, where it's just a black singlet, black boots, maybe I'll add socks and wrist tape. That one might be able to get it all cleaned and the paint removed and painted more like 2.5-3 hours. But yeah, some of them, it's more a labor of love than anything. If I'm selling them to somebody, it's, you know, it's not like I'm in it for profit or anything. Usually it's somebody wants a figure in a certain style that it didn't come with. And so just as a hobby and to try and make people happy, I'll be able to do something like that. You know, instead of Ricky Steamboat just with black tights and trunks, I'll put him in the white that he had at WrestleMania 3 and try to put little dragons on the side of each boot and add have white boots, but little red socks and black laces on there. And again, do maybe a red headband instead of a black headband. So it's just fun to me. And it's just a way to pass the time and kind of reconnect with these things and bring them back to life, instead of a figure that might go in the dumpster or just be forgotten about forever up in an attic. Now I don't want to say a work of art, but it's given some new life, and it's something that somebody might put on a shelf and look at it and admire and just give them a spark of joy during the day that puts a smile on their face, you know. And you know, I had another buddy, Tim, who hosts a show called Pulling Up a Chair. He got me a custom Mr. T from WrestleMania 1, and it even has a real chain. And so that was just a plain figure, but painting something like that, it fills a gap in a collection that they didn't have in the LJN line. So having a Mr. T that you wish you had, or a natural Butch Reed. There's a guy named Sin Bodhi, Kizarni is who he wrestled at, and he's a real talented sculptor. And I got a blank 3D resin Butch Reed figure that I painted, one of my favorite figures. I saw Butch Reed wrestle 3 times in person. I share a birthday with him, but he's got 20 years on me. But yeah, stuff like that where it kind of fills a gap in the LJN line, stuff like that. It's super fun. Or a John Nada, Roddy Piper figure, you know, stuff that you never would have dreamed you'd have as a kid. And now I've gotten to the point where I can take on a project like that and feel confident that I can make it work.
I know from one of the episodes I listened to of your show, you had talked about you did a repaint of Billy Jack Kane's, and you put knee pads on him. And I think there was another episode where you had repainted Roddy Piper to be the masked Canadian, and he had a mask. So when you have to construct those things like knee pads or masks or, you know, gloves or whatever, what's the process for that? How do you construct those extra pieces?
So for the masked Canadian who Roddy wrestled as in the late 70s in Los Angeles and in Japan, that was something where a good friend, Mark Halverson up in Canada, who's a real talented customizer also, I got a lot of advice from him when I first started doing this. He's up in Canada. I thought it would be a kick in the butt to make a masked Canadian for him. For him, I was lazy, and I just painted the mask on top of Roddy's head. you know, if I felt more confident about it, I would have taken an X-Acto knife and carved Roddy's hair off, so it would have been more rounded, and that would have probably looked better. But I didn't feel good about my skill set. But with doing knee pads for Paul Orndorff, who didn't have them, or knee pads for Billy Jack Haynes, or doing a King Kong Bundy when he first showed up in either late February or early March of 85, right before WrestleMania, the first WrestleMania, he showed up in WWF, and he showed up with a cape and with sunglasses. So I did a King Kong Bundy that had a stain on one of the shoulders. I was like, well, I know, I'll cover that stain. I'll make a cape for him. So I took this material called Milliput, and this was upon the recommendation of Mark Halverson. And that's something where it's like plumber's putty. And so you have a limited amount of time where you mix these two parts together and they react correctly, and you can sculpt out of it and kind of form knee pads and put them on the figure, and it stays on there great. But yeah, I'm not super talented at it. So it's to make knee pads, it looks pretty decent. The cape came off pretty well. I did a Andre the Giant figure that had the afro from the 1984 series. The Andre that's, you know, not the best sculpt or mold. It's not a great looking figure. But I thought, hey, I'll add a brown vest to him. So I sculpted a vest using this Milliput material, and that turned out really cool. So I don't use it too often because I feel so inadequate when it comes to sculpting, but maybe someday I'll get brave again and I'll do more of that. Knee pads in particular are something that like I say, Paul Orndorff, it makes his figure, it makes a huge difference putting knee pads on there, or Billy Jack Haynes, same thing. But some of these figures, there's 65 different molds or sculpts that they've got. And if you count the Sergeant Slaughter figure from the Hasbro built as a knockoff LJN, there's 66 molds or sculpts. And so far I've done 50 if you count the Sergeant Slaughter. I had a buddy, Travis from TB Toycast. Travis and Brian have a great podcast about toys called TV Toycast, and Travis has a 3D printer. So he's printed off some of these figures that I'm not going to spend hundreds of dollars to repaint them to get a Sergeant Slaughter, or I'm not going to spend $100 to get a Bret Hart figure. So Travis has printed off some of these figures that are a little out of my price range. And so far, like I say, I've done 50 out of the 66 different molds from LJN or that Sergeant Slaughter Hasbro. I've repainted them. So someday I'd like to do the other 16 and have painted every figure that LJN or that that they put out. So that's kind of an end goal. And somebody like one of the ones I just finished, a Corporal Kirshner, it took me you know, all this time, almost 2 years, a little over 2 years painting him before I thought, well, what could I do with Corporal Kirshner? He's already got camouflage pants. He's got a green shirt. There's not much I can do with that figure. And finally I started, I actually looked at his attire and I thought, oh, you know, he had a camouflage shirt also. So I did a Corporal Kirshner where I gave him camouflage, which I've never painted before. And I just thought, well, I'll just go for it. And so he turned out really cool having a camouflage shirt, camouflage pants. The original figure just had the same color belt as the tights. So I did a black belt. And so sometimes it's just getting in there and doing a figure that you've never done before, doing something that's out of your comfort zone. And those tend to be the most satisfying figures, is doing a figure with gear that you've never painted before, you know, putting Randy Savage instead of just having the short trunks. I did one recently that gave him long tights and then I painted stripes on the actual sunglasses and did a little more detail on the boots and like I say, just doing some stuff that's out of your comfort zone. When you get all finished with the product project, even if it's 7, 8, 9 hours later, it's just a good satisfying feeling to do something that's out of your comfort zone.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Brian for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. You name it, they got it. So stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you could check them out online. WGComics.com is the web address. And they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just look for at WG Comics. Who are some of your favorite LJNs? Which are the of the lot of them, did you say maybe 4 or 5 of them? Could you say which are your favorites, or is that?
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, okay. So if I had a Mount Rushmore of LJNs, it'd be Roddy Piper and Randy Savage and King Kong Bundy, and you know, it's hard not to include Hulk on that list. He's my own personal favorite. Four Mount Rushmore of wrestlers would probably be Roddy Piper, Randy Savage, Andre the Giant, and Bret Hart. But as far as LJN figures, you almost got to include Hulk in there. Everybody had Hulk, and he could slam people. He's Junkyard Dog is high on that list also, playability wise. But really, Roddy, Bundy, and Randy are probably my three favorite. I'd ask you the same question. What are your favorites out of the whole line of figures?
Because of the, I was also a G.I. Joe nerd. Sergeant Slaughter is on the list. Bam Bam Bigelow. Because I just liked Bigelow and I thought his figure was cool as hell. Brutus Beefcake, because as a kid I loved Brutus Beefcake, but the older I got, the more I'm like, this guy's ridiculous. What the hell was I? What did I ever see in him? But his figure I thought was awesome. Strike Force, I thought Rick Martel and Tito was fantastic. I liked Tito in the purple trunks too, so having him in the all white was awesome. Yeah, and I mean, you're right. Hogan was great because he could do the leg drop. His leg was bent that way. He could body slam people. Junkyard Dog also could do the power slam. Yeah, there were so many. I also do appreciate that you brought it up on your show about how there was some inconsistencies in the schematics of things. Like, for an example, Greg the Hammer Valentine is like at least an inch taller than all the other figures, or Big John Studd was another one that he seemed so broad and so wide. And I appreciate you bringing those up because that answered some questions for me, because I've always wondered, like, how come some of these figures are bigger than the others, you know? So it's a tip of the hat to you for helping me out with educating me on those facts.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And like you say, Valentine and Beefcake and Orndorff, those are all they were all in 1985 with Bundy and George Steele. And Bundy and George Steele, they both seem perfectly normal in the line, but the other three are definitely a little big. Valentine in particular, especially when you compare him to the year before, Jimmy Snuka is almost he's just way too small. So there's,
yeah,
so yeah, the scale on the figures, you know, Jake the Snake Roberts is tiny. You put him next to a Rick Rude figure, Rick Rude is far too he's too big. Jake Roberts, I think just to get him in the pack, in the packaging with Damian, they made him too darn small. So but yeah, it's There's imperfections to them. They're gonna get messed up. But yeah, it's just the whole nostalgia of it is really what draws me to them. And then, you know, incorporating things I didn't think I'd have in the show, like I've got a pretty wide musical background as far as the stuff I listen to. I spent from age 16 until age 45. I sold car stereos was what I did. And I designed systems and I got in and I tuned systems in cars so that I could get them to sound just like I thought they were supposed to sound. And it was really fun bringing music to people and making it sound good in their car where they spend so much time listening. And so being able to incorporate Andre singing a Bob Dylan song, I've seen Bob 19 times, or singing Beatles songs, or singing even something more recent. It's just, something I never saw the show going there, and having it go there and doing something like that. It's just so much. It just brings me a lot of joy, and for people to get cracked up over it. And you know, there's a song called Savage that he did that it's a the words aren't appropriate, but hearing Andre the Giant sing that song for Rucker over at Boot to the Face, that one got a lot of laughs. Or a song called Strokin'. I don't know if you ever heard that one, but
is that Billy Squire?
No, it's
that's The Stroke, I think, is Billy Squire.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
Okay, I was close.
Yeah, no, there's a gentleman that sang. His name is Clarence Carter, and I first discovered him from B. Brian Blair told me that I got to spend, like, say, a little bit of time with him, and he mentioned in a tweet that I had done that Roddy Piper used to call him Patches, and I was like, well, where does that come from? And so when I went out to New Jersey and I got to talk to B. Brian, he explained that there was a song that is about basically a poor boy with hard times, and that Roddy Piper nicknamed him Patches because of that song. So Clarence Carter, I mentioned to my best friend Eric, I was like, yeah, Patches, Andre's going to sing Patches. I think it'd be really cool. And then and Eric said, well, check out Strokin'. And so there's an episode that's not too long ago that's just all Andre singing. That's about 12 or 14 songs on it. And towards the end of that, Patches and Strokin' are on there. If you're looking for a good laugh, check that episode out. I think you'll get a kick out of Strokin' for sure.
Hey, real quickly, did you have, because obviously you had the ring for the LJNs, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Did you have the steel cage accessory that went with it?
I did, the big blue cage. I tried to assemble that again recently, and one of the little corners on it was brittle and broke. And I was like, so I boxed it up again. I don't want to. And I had that same guy that recorded the show for me, the opening for me, Chris Consoli. He sells and puts together ring ropes, so you can get new ring ropes from him. He's even got an LJN ring that he had signed by Hulk, and I think he's got about 16 Hall of Famers that have signed this LJN ring, and he's selling it on eBay. So if anybody's interested in that, they can reach out to me. I'm on Twitter at 80_wrestling. If they're interested in something like that, it's a really cool piece. But yeah, you can actually get he can even restore the ring. I had him on my show, and he talked about the process of restoring an old messed up ring and bringing it back to looking like new again, and making new ropes so that you could have a ring looking new again. But mine, it sits in my garage, and it's got a lot of my collection just in it right now, just sitting there. And I haven't put the ring ropes that he gave me on it. Someday maybe I'll do that. But right now it just kind of sits there. I'm not in play mode as much as display mode nowadays.
So did you collect other figures, like WCW Galoob figures, or the San Francisco Toy ECW figures, or the AWA Remcos that we mentioned? Did you collect any of those as a kid?
So unlike you, I got into the Bendy's figures, which there was 19 of the little 4-inch Bendy's WWF figures, and then rapidly moved into the LJNs. And so I had only the figures from 84, 85, 86, and 87, and I stopped collecting, and I didn't get any of the ones from 88 or 89. So your collection, it's awesome that you stuck with it that whole time, and then but I never got into the Hasbros or the Galoobs, and I missed out on those last couple years of LJN. So it was 2015, 2016 when I started getting on eBay and finishing the line and collecting the rest of them. And so it just in the last 7 or 8 years, I've collected some of the Mattels, but I've backed off on those and kind of only focused on these 8-inch figures. The LJNs, the repaints that I've done, and also the Big Rubber Guys figures from Major, and I just ordered a Dusty Rhodes that Mattel put out today. And then I just dipped my toe back into the Mattel realm. They came out with a Piper's Pit set, which I couldn't hold off. It came with Paul Orndorff, Cowboy Bob Orton, Roddy Piper, and a backdrop for Piper's Pit. And so the first main event I ever saw was Roddy Piper against Cowboy Bob Orton in December of 86. And Danny Davis, evil referee Danny Davis, was a special ref. So I really enjoyed you listening to you talk to Cowboy Bob Orton on I think it was episode 165 that you did, that you replayed not too long ago. I'd encourage everybody to go check out that episode from John. It's just so much fun. Listening to One Man Gang just give you the hardest time, but also getting to hear Animal and Cowboy Bob Orton and Tito Santana and Tatanka talk to you, that one, I can see that why that's a favorite of yours. It was just super entertaining.
Oh yeah. It will be my favorite episode ever. A million years from now, I'll still say that was my favorite episode because it was 8-year-old John's dream come true. So let's talk about some favorite wrestlers, though, because obviously big fan. So who are some of those wrestlers that you love to cheer on or love to boo?
You know, it was it's really that sweet spot of 86, 87. 88 is the prime time for me. Like Andre the Giant in the NFL Battle Royal at WrestleMania 2. That's pretty much the first time I saw him. So I did one of his figures and painted him with the yellow trunks and yellow boots from that event. The connection with the NFL was big time for me because I was a big football fan also. And so Russ Francis, who was a 49er when they had that battle royal, he was the last football player in the event. And I learned years later that his dad was a promoter in Hawaii and Russ actually had some wrestling experience and kind of knew what he was doing in there. And so it got down to the Hart Foundation and Andre and Russ Francis at the end. But yeah, I always loved Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation. When my best friend Eric and I would do the heart attack clothesline where I would jump off the side of the swimming pool and Eric would be holding my brother up so that I could clothesline him in the swimming pool. We would pretend I would be Bret Hart and he would be Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Roddy Piper, by far my favorite. Randy Savage, right there with him. I like you. When Roddy retired that first time at WrestleMania 3, I was just so bummed. I'd only been watching wrestling for 8 or 9 months at that point, but I was so heavy into it. And for him to call it quits at that time, I was looking for a new favorite guy. And so since Brutus the Barber Beefcake, Brutus at the time, jumped in the ring and shaved Adrian's head, that was one of the first guys I kind of gravitated towards. And yeah, the barber gimmick was kind of hokey, but still Brutus, Bret Hart, Don Morocco that summer when he turned face against Cowboy Bob Orton, his tag team partner at the time. Those guys are some of my favorites, and I absolutely loved the Paul Orndorff heel turn against Hulk Hogan in July of 86. That's probably my favorite heel turn of all time. Nowadays you'd see it coming from a mile away, but as 11 and just turned 12 year old little Brian, I didn't see it coming. And so to see that devastating clothesline followed by a pile driver, Orndorff has always been somebody I love to hate and love to I don't know, I can't really say I hated him. Again, I wasn't really a Hulkamaniac, so it was just so much excitement and thinking that guy actually had a chance to beat Hogan. So yeah, Piper, Savage, Andre, Bret Hart, Morocco, Orndorff. These are the guys that are near and dear. And my favorite match of all time is Savage Steamboat at WrestleMania 3. I always bummed that Steamboat dropped the belt June 2nd, the Honky Tonk Man. And it just, I thought he would hold it for a lot longer than that. And it just wasn't to be. And I loved Randy's title run in 88 as a face. I got to see him face Andre the Giant on a Saturday night's main event taping. And that was just amazing to get to see Andre in person facing Savage in person. I was thinking, is there going to be a title change at this thing? And we didn't know it was going to be a Saturday night's main event taping going in at that same card as an undercard match that, or a dark match that wasn't shown. Hogan went against Boss Man. That's the only time I actually saw Hulk Hogan wrestle. And he was a guest on the Brother Love show and got to be the first guy to actually inflict some damage on Brother Love. They showed that as part of that Saturday night's main event. So yeah, those are long-winded answers galore today on your show. I apologize for being a long-winded guy, but yeah, this is all stuff that it just hits that nostalgia button, and I'm fairly passionate about talking about it. So I appreciate the opportunity to do so on your show here, my friend.
No problem. Well, as we go to start to wrap things up here, just going to throw it out there real quick. You mentioned Legion of Doom, the Road Warriors. You had mentioned them. What was the name of that company again that you said?
So if you go to BigBadToyStore.com.
Okay. Big Bad Toy Store. Okay.
They had an exclusive release of those Road Warriors. And there's a poster where they're in the same pose that you can see them on the poster. And the shoulder pads are removable. So this is right there at the tip of the top of the list as far as the coolest figures that have come out from the company Major, as far as the big rubber guys figures. So like I say, I got a bunch of figures sitting here in front of me that I've been showing you throughout the show, but I just know how much you admired Animal and the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
So I figured I gotta show John these, and I think that they're still available on pre-order up there. You may be able to get the older NWA version still at major.com. I think they have some left, and they do free shipping.
They do.
Those are awesome as well. And so yeah, I'd highly recommend either set. They're both fantastic sets of figures. So if you got an extra, say $115 with tax, maybe to get the ones in red, maybe $120 with shipping, or you got another, $112 or so to get the ones from Major in black. I'd recommend jumping in. They look fantastic if you're thinking about adding to your collection.
Well, I did add to the Road Warriors because Memorial Day, their big sale, I got them for like $90
nice.
For both of them. So
did you receive them?
I did.
What do you think, man?
They're awesome. Unfortunately, I put them in the closet back here because the dog was in here, and I'm like, yeah, you know what? That's right at mouth level. We're going to put those up in the closet there. Not that she would do that, but you get a little bit. I got a little bit. I don't know. But I have also over in the corner some of my more newer collections, which I know you can't quite see, but I'm. As you probably heard, I'm a huge Bruiser Brody mark. Like, that was my favorite wrestler. Brody was my favorite, still is to this day. Because I bought into him hook, line, and sinker. Like, when I would see him wrestle, I use this as the analogy. I would sit on the couch and go, I'm going to see a homicide. This man, Brody's going to kill this dude. So I have the Power Town Bruiser Brody and the Zombie Toys Bruiser Brody. And Zombie Sailor also did a Big Bully Busick, and he lived a couple towns away from me when I was a teenager. So I got him that. And then I got the Midnight Express set from Figures Toy, Bobby, Dennis, Stan, and Jim Cornette. So those are just some of the newer acquisitions I procured, if you will, over the last year or so.
Well, keep your eyes peeled. There's another couple brothers, J&J Figures, jandjfigures.com, jjfigures.com. Check on there and see if they still have the Big Rubber Guys Bruiser Brody, because it looks phenomenal. The pre-order is done on it, but they may have it at jjfigures.com. And when it does actually ship, which I think it might be set for September. When it actually ships, the guys at Major will probably be selling some of those on Whatnot, Canic, and Michael Canick and Brian Myers and Matt Cardona all run Whatnot streams, and they all sell these figures as they come out on Whatnot. But like I say, JJ Figures is a great source where you might be able to get a Bruiser Brody. He has the accessory chain. Awesome looking figure. So I got one of those. I think if you check it out, you'll be trying to hunt one down, and it should be in the $50 range. Use code old J, just the letter J, old J on jjfigures.com, and you can save, I want to say it's 10% at their site. But those are a couple of great guys that sell all kinds of different manufacturers figures, including the Big Rubber guys.
Well, you don't have to say anymore because I already pre-ordered the Brody. I knew it was coming. Nice. I went ahead and pre-ordered it. And I actually pre-ordered the Missy Hyatt Big Rubber guys because I'm like, you know what? She deserves to have her own action figure. I'm down with that. So I pre-ordered those two because, yeah, I'm like I said, I was a huge Brody mark as a kid. So
I got to talk to his wife, Barbara Goodish, on she was a guest on 80s Wrestling, the podcast. It's probably been a year and a half or two ago, but just the sweetest lady, so kind, really enjoyed speaking with her. So, you know, if you reach out to her, she might be somebody that would be willing to be a guest on your show. And oh, cool. She's just a very lovely lady. So, it was so devastating that summer. Within a 2-week period, we lost Adrian Adonis and Bruiser Brody in July of 88. And it was just, it was stunning to be sitting there watching Entertainment Tonight and having Roddy Piper, who'd been away from the ring for a while, talking about Adrian, and then having them talk about Bruiser Brody and that situation down in Puerto Rico. And it's just, I wish I'd gotten to see more of his stuff because boy, that he was one hell of a force. You know, I feel like you probably could go through 3 street fights and not have the beating that you would get from Bruiser Brody in the ring.
You know what? And as a kid, because that happened, what, 87, right? 87 or 88.
88.
Yep. 88. July 88. So I'm 13. I'm 13 years old. And I remember vividly reading in the After mags about both of those because I had not seen World Class, or somehow I missed that. I miss all the acknowledgement. Even I don't even know if they did many of those things. I know they did for like David Von Erich and whatnot, but I was confused. I didn't know because I'm like, wait, Bruce, how's this guy dead? And how's Adrian Adonis dead? They're dead? Like it messed with me. It messed with my fandom. Even though I kind of knew something was up. Ever since I started watching wrestling, I knew something was up, but I didn't know what that was. Like I knew there was something, there was some voodoo or some magic going on that I'm watching, but I don't know how they do it. I don't know, you know. I think for me, the tip-off was when you see the Ultimate Warrior trash like a job guy, like you know, and then the very next week, the job guy's wrestling against, you know, superstar Billy Graham. And it's like, wait a minute, you just got ass-handed last week, but I still didn't know how they did it. So I was still cool with the idea that there's some mojo at foot here.
Yeah, I mean, there's things as a kid that I don't want to mention on air and be spoiler for that you accept, and you might have an inkling that things aren't on the up and up, but you're more than willing to go with the flow. And I think it was May of 87 when Sheik and Hacksaw got pulled over, and it's like, wait a second, they're driving together and they're doing drugs? What? This isn't cool. What's going on here? So that was like the confirmation for me. But yeah, the tragedy of death, like, you know, you might deal with it with a few people, you know, at that age, a few family members, and it's horrible, but it's always jarring as a kid when each time that death hits you square in the face, and to have two stars of wrestling that are in their prime, in their 30s, for Adrian, Brody was probably a little older. I'd say maybe early 40s, but these larger than life guys knocked down, it's jarring. And Angie, Adrian's daughter too, I've communicated with her a little bit, and she's also very kind and has some bitter feelings towards WWF and Vince and everything. But there was a lot of bad stuff that went down as far as that whole situation with people like stealing Adrian's cash and belongings and stuff. at the site of the accident. So there's some crazy stuff that went down in both those situations, with the car crash and of course with Brody getting murdered. And so, yeah, if that was your guy, to see something like that happen, it's just it's jarring at that age for sure.
All right. Well, Brian, man, it's been awesome talking to you. So let's wrap things up here real quick. Where can folks find you on the internet one more time?
You know, I have Twitter's changed a lot. So if you're not there, I understand. But I built a presence there over the last 5 years. It's at 80_wrestling on Twitter. I'm also 80s wrestling fan on Instagram. And if you're just looking for the show and you want to check it out or listen to some Andre singing, my show is called Legendary Wrestling Figures. And I did a kind of a stupid thing, and I spelled it LEJENDARY for legendary, because I wanted LJN to be in the title. So if you're looking for it and you're spelling legendary the correct way, you may not find it. But if you think of LJN figures and you spell legendary wrestling figures with LEJENDARY wrestling figures, then you can find that wherever you listen to your podcasts. And the last few minutes of probably the last 70 or 80 shows, you can hear Andre karaoke, which is one of the more popular segments on the show. But you can also listen a ton of these shows. I've just got some fantastic people, just the nicest guys that come on and talk about their fandom and about these figures. So it's just been a super fun experience doing it. And I appreciate you taking the extra time and sharing it with me tonight, John. It's been a blast. So I really appreciate you.
Well, you're quite welcome. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, I have a surprise. I have a surprise for everybody listening. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of that break, you're going to hear Andre sing us home with Happy Trails. So there you go. A special event for a special occasion, talking about LJNs with Brian. And so with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to it. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear Andre serenade us home with Happy Trails.
All right, everyone, it is time for Andre Karaoke. This song is for all the guests at PVD Cast. It is Happy Trails. Here you go. Happy Trails to you. Until we meet again, happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you. Till we meet again. Trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you. Till we meet again. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you, to meet again. Thank you for listening to the PVD Cast. We hope you are doing well. Take care.